Welcome to the Broadway Radio Show. I'm Donald Feltham, and I'm thrilled to have back Anne Kittredge. Hi, Anne. Anne is back because she's got a brand new album called Romantic Notions, which is a fantastic new album. I listened to it as soon as Anne sent me the link for me to listen to the tracks. I sat down and listened to it. And it is definitely, as again, my listeners get tired of hearing this, but I tell people whenever you sit down to listen to an album, you should dedicate the time to listen to it from beginning to end in one sitting. And Romantic Notions is definitely the kind of album you need to do that with, because Anne is going to take you on a musical journey. And she is setting a mood and a tone and a definite distinctive theme to this particular album. I think maybe more so than the last album. I mean, this has definitely got a real viewpoint to this album. And I think, I mean, I liked your last album, but I think this might be the best. I think this is your better album. This is just so amazingly well done. I mean, I was floored when I listened to it. I got done with it and I went, this is such a fantastic album. It's so well done.
There's good reason for that. I mean, you know, that first album was a fluke. And by that, I mean that I had no expectations for it. None. This was something that came out of the pandemic, not so far as I was working on it during the pandemic at all, but because the pandemic just made me start thinking about life differently and about what I wanted to, you know, what I wanted to have leave with the world. And, you know, here I had these kids and I thought, well, I love these arrangements. I'm going to record them. There was never an intention for it to win awards and have, you know, all of these hundreds of thousands of streams. None. There was no intention of that. It just kind of happened. So you are absolutely right. This album actually, I actually intended it. I'm like, we actually, like, you know, let's really think about this and make it. So yeah, absolutely.
So that's exactly where I want to start, which is, what were your goals or thoughts going into this project in terms of kind of the themes or what you really wanted to accomplish with this recording, and where, you know, the concept of Romantic Notions came from, and what you really wanted to explore?
So, you know, a bunch of different things came together at once. First of all, I had no intention of going back into the studio so quickly after the first album. Like, that was not even a glimmer in my eye. But the head of Jazz Heads, my album company, Randy Klein, was like, you got to get back into the studio. You know, this album's doing well. You want to kind of, you know, follow it up. And so then came the thing of like, oh my gosh, like, I have to actually do this intentionally now. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And then, I know this sounds crazy. I mean, really, you're going to think this is insane. But one of the reviews, actually a couple of them, but one in particular, a review of my first album, Reimagine, the reviewer spoke about how he thought that I had a real skill for romantic storytelling. And I thought, do I? You know, I thought maybe I should explore that, but because of who I am, I would be bored if I was just doing a very conventional romantic song album. That wouldn't really interest me. Mm-hmm. And so then it became, so what is it about, you know? And so I thought, well, how else do I perceive romance? And then, of course, there's that song from the show, Romance, Romance, called Romantic Notions. And all of a sudden, I was like, oh my gosh, that notions word gives me so much space.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's where it began. That is where it began.
Right. Because the whole concept, one of the things that I think is interesting about the album is that, like you said, it gives you a lot of space because it's not just love songs, and it's not necessarily just songs that are about romance in the more specific terms, because it's a really broad spectrum of what you cover, because you are covering things like courtship and passion and the breakup, but also things as diverse as like a lullaby of what a mother can sing to a child, which is a different kind of love.
Romantic to that, isn't
right.
there? there's a component of, you know, sometimes it's just the quality of the sound that gives mm-hmm. you romantic sense. And I think that's as, you know, accurate to use as, you know, a storytelling song about romance, right?
Right. So talk about the process then, because once you've kind of got that broad concept, talk about the process of actually picking the songs, because, you know, one of the things you always, what I like about you is that you do tend to pick an eclectic selection of songs. You did, which is good, because you don't, you know, it's not, trust me, it's not, no one's going to pick up the album and it's not going to be, oh, here's a classic Gershwin song and here's a classic Rodgers and Hammerstein love song. And here's, it's going to be a wide array of songs. And I know you work very closely with Barry, mm-hmm. you know, Kleinbort, who works with you on this. Yeah. And Christopher Denny, who does your arrangements, to kind of pull together the song list. So what was the process of seeking out these songs?
Yeah. So, well, just because of who I am, the foundation of all of this is what kind of a worker am I? And, you know, there are literally hundreds of songs out there that I love, but that I would never record because I have nothing more to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they're so definitive, or, you know, there's some songs on this album that I thought were definitively done before me, but I also felt like I had something to say. So I was okay to explore that and find my in. But there are a lot of songs that I don't feel that way. I'm like, well, this is great. What do I have to do? You know, so the foundation is everything had to be something that I was going to be able to bring a fresh perspective to, right? And then the first song actually that we did, this was before Barry got involved. Chris and I kind of did about five of the 12 things Chris and I did. And then Barry joined us as a consultant after that. But the first song we did was I Just Want to Dance with You.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that we brought it into like a swing, jazzy kind of a place. You know, it's a huge George Strait country hit. And that was, again, Randy Klein, a jazz head, said, you got to look at John Prine. You got to do a John Prine. So I said, okay. So we just kind of went through his catalog and we landed on I Just Want to Dance with You. I can't tell you how much I love that arrangement, partly because it happens so quickly. Like sometimes arrangements just, you know, it some not. But this one, we had the arrangement that very first day.
Mm-hmm.
And I really thought we brought some... You know, it's like I said to someone, you would not listen to that arrangement and think that it was a country song.
Right.
You're not listening to it going, oh, that doesn't quite work. You know, you don't. Chris did such a, you know, a really brilliant, and he said, we were talking about this the other day. He said, it's only because I didn't know it as a country song. He said, if I knew it as a country song, we probably would have been screwed, but we didn't.
Well,
so.
But right. Because that sometimes hinders you, because if you're really familiar with the original version, it's hard to get that out of your head and to look at it from a different perspective.
Yes.
As opposed to just picking up the sheet music and not being familiar with it and just sitting in there and plunking it out on the piano for the very first time and becoming familiar with it that way and allowing an arranger like Chris Denny to like play with it and come up with something new.
And I didn't listen to George Strait's version until after the album was in production, because I figured, you know, don't do that to yourself, Anne. I don't wanna be the kind to hesitate, be too shy, way too late. I don't care what they say other lovers do, I just wanna dance with you. I got a feeling that you have a heart like mine. Let it show, let it shine. If we have a chance to make one heart of two, I just wanna dance with you. I wanna dance with you. Twirl you all around the floor. That's what they intended dancing for.
I just want to dance with you. I want to dance with you. Hold you in my arms once more. That's what they invented dancing for. I just want to dance with you. I caught you looking at me when I looked at you. Yes, I did. Now, ain't that true? You won't get embarrassed by the things I do. I just want to dance with you. The boys are playing softly, and the girls are too. So am I, and so are you. If this was a movie, we'd be right on cue. I just want to dance with you. I wanna dance with you. Twirl you all around the floor. That's what they intended dancing for. I just wanna dance with you. I wanna dance with you. Hold you in my arms once more. That's what they invented dancing for. I just wanna dance with you.
I mean, I love that rendition so much because of that. And then, you know, and then to the other extreme, and that kind of quick arrangement thing also happened with Didn't We? Didn't We took even less time. Didn't We took like, it was spooky, like 15 minutes, but literally it was just, oh, this is it. And it's a very layered song.
Mm-hmm.
But what Chris provides me is this kind of torturous, steady underpinning, so that then I can just do what I need to do, and I'm not interrupted with a lot of craziness behind me. You know what I mean? He just gives me this wonderful, wonderful foundation of accompaniment underneath, and then we can do it. And I think it works really well. The other end of that, it would be "You're My Home," the Billy Joel song, which had to go on the album because. I sang it to my husband at our wedding 38 years ago. Mm-hmm. So that one had to go on. But 38 years ago, I sang it just like Billy Joel. So now I was like, well, if we're putting this on the album, I got to find my voice.
Mm-hmm.
Or no. I mean, we tortured on that one a little bit, but it was also probably hard for me to, that was a tough one because I wanted to make sure that it still captured, you know, all the wonderful things about the song and about my husband. But Billy Joel's so brilliant. That was, you know, that took us a long time. And the other song that took us about, I would say, 3 months is Tambourine Man.
Oh.
And the reason for that was because I was passionate about having that song on the album and my creative team wasn't so sure. And so it took a little bit of convincing them. And once they heard my vision, I mean, they were just so there for me. But I so deeply felt that that was a love song to music. You know, it's even though Bob Dylan's lyrics are very they're Bob Dylan lyrics. Let's just say, you know, he talks about how everyone thinks he was high on drugs and you wrote that song. And he's like, I wasn't even doing hard drugs when I wrote that song. that's his claim. Like, no, I promise you, I wasn't drug riddled when I wrote it.
Evening's empire has returned into sand, vanished from my hand, left me blindly here to stand, but still not sleeping. My weariness amazes me. I'm branded on my feet. I have no one to meet. And the ancient empty streets too dead for dreaming. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy, and there is no place I'm going to. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. In the jingle jangle morning, I'll come following you. Take me on a trip upon your magic swirling ship. My senses have been stripped. My hands can't feel the grip, my toes too numb to step. Wait only for my booties to be wandering. I'm ready to go anywhere, I'm ready for to fade into my own parade. Cast your dancing spell my way, I promise to go under it. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. In the jingle jangle morning, I'll come following you. Then take me disappearing through the smoke rings of my mind, down the foggy ruins of time, far past the frozen leaves. The haunted, frightened trees, out to the windy beach, far from the twisted reach of crazy sorrow. Yes, to dance beneath the diamond sky, with one hand waving free, silhouetted by the sea, circled by the circus sands, with all memory and fate driven deep beneath the waves. Let me forget about today until tomorrow. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play your song for me. I'm not sleepy, and there is no place I'm going to. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play your song for me. In the jingle jangle morning, I'll come following you. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, in the jingle jangle morning, I'll come following you.
when you work on a lyric like that, that is so flowery, I guess you could say, I mean, it's very, you know, it took a lot of time to make sure that we were capturing that love story to just music itself, which I truly believe that song is about more than anything. And, but then when we got it, I mean, I don't think there's a single song on the album that I feel like we didn't get where we wanted to go with it. You know what I mean? Like we have other songs we recorded that didn't make it to the album.
Oh, okay.
But these that ended up on the album, I think we all as a team really felt like we really got what we wanted.
And it's like I said at the beginning of this, the array of songwriters is, it's so, I'm going to use the word eclectic again, because as you said, you've got Billy Joel, you've got Bob Dylan, you've got Stevie Wonder, you've got country music songwriters, you've got some musical theater represented because you've got Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Flaherty. Even though it's not a musical theater song, it's a song, a separate standalone song from them, which we're going to talk about in a minute.
Musical theater writer.
Written by musical theater writers. You got Steve Lutback, who we're going to talk about a little bit also, who unfortunately passed away last year. But we'll talk about in a second. But what draws you to the songs you ultimately pick? I mean, obviously, like you said, you're trying to find songs that you feel that you can add something to, songs that you feel that you can add your own personalized touch to and add your own message to. But you are certainly drawn to specific kinds of songwriters, right? I mean, it's people who are telling stories.
Well, you know, Carole King, you know, Billy Joel, Jimmy Webb, Bob Dylan, they're all my musical life story. That's who I was raised with. You know, that's the music I was raised with. So that certainly was a part of it. It was important for me, you know, when we were looking at the album, we were like, okay, so we've got this kind of a song. Now, how do we find this? You know, in some ways we were doing that. Like, for instance, the Stevie Wonder one, that was, one of the last ones that we came up with. And that, was honestly, I'm looking at my album and I'm going, guys, I need an upbeat. You know, I need something with, you know, I literally said to them, I want a dance number on this album. Said, I want something that people would dance to. And I think it really is a dance song, don't you think? It's like really that Afro-Latin infused kind of feel. So sometimes it was as simple as that, you know? And like, you know, Garden was kind of an easy one because it's...
Yeah, where did Garden come from?
So I've known Lynn and Steve. Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Flaherty wrote Ragtime. They wrote Once on This Island. They wrote Anastasia. You know, they're big.
Yeah,
they're
pretty well known.
Yeah. And so I've known both of them for decades. And I actually knew them separately for like the first 20 years of knowing them. It was really weird. But anyway, and so about 6 years ago, I did a tribute show for them at 54 Below. And they were so great. They, you know, Lynn was rewriting me lyrics and they were sending us music and all this stuff. And I just said to them, I said, do you have anything in your trunk that, you know, that maybe I could share with the audience? And she gave me this. And the story behind this song is that they had originally written it as a standalone for the great Karen Akers. And who was the lead in Nine. She's one of my idols. We're friends now, but you know, up until a few years ago, she was just an idol. And anyway, so, and it didn't fit in Karen's voice. Karen just didn't feel like it fit in her voice. So she didn't use it. And it just sat in their trunk all of those years. I think, 15 years. And so when I asked for it, you know, they were very kind. They gave it to me. And Karen came to my show and she said, oh my gosh, I don't even recognize it. It's like they kept working on it after I rejected it. I said, I guess maybe. I mean, she would not have used the word reject because she wouldn't do that. But, it, you know, after she had decided it wasn't right. It's such a beautiful story about an older relationship. But even more than that, how somebody, you know, survives a loss, I think it's beautiful.
My friends are taking cruises. Come along, they always say. Now that Jimmy's gone, you ought to. Now that Jimmy's gone, come play. I just laugh and tell them go. They say come, but I say no. Bring back something from the sea. But me, I've got my garden. There's so much I have to do now. Summer's coming, come what may. Roses need a heavy pruning. Set the dahlias yesterday. Oh, my hands, they look a sight. Neck gets red, the rest is white. Got to weed round Jimmy's tree. You see, I've got my garden. Me and Jimmy, we went places, drove the coast of Maine one year, missed the lilacs that one spring, and lost some seedlings to the deer. All the time we're up in Maine, sights kept whizzing by. I kept wondering, will it rain? Left my garden dry. Oh, I could travel if I wanted. Jimmy left me safe and sound. But I travel every morning to my sky, my plants, my ground. 5 a.m. I'm on my knees in a world that no one sees. Jimmy knew I'm just that way, he'd say. She's got her garden. Got a postcard from Diane. On her cruise, she met a man. She's as happy as can be for a person out to sea. Well, I just noticed through the window overnight, a rose unfurled. Overnight, another door to one more small, enormous world, waterfalls and tiny lands, universes in my hands. People tell me, go see someplace new. My garden.
It's a really gorgeous song, and you can feel the Aaron's and Flaherty touch to it.
Oh yeah,
yeah, and it's nice because you can really feel that it's been tailored for you. Because it really has been.
I don't think it was. No.
Well, but it sounds like it. I mean, it fits perfectly with your voice.
It fits me perfectly. It does. That I agree with you. Alex Rybak accompanies that one on the album, mm-hmm. That's the song that he, and I remember when we first got the song and we first ran through it. I mean, Alex and I looked at each other like, oh, okay, well, that's done. I mean, you know, it just so perfectly fit me. And I do think that I'm most interested in storytelling songs, and mm-hmm. that is just a multi-layered storytelling song, you know. So, it kind of fit all of my strengths,
right? Exactly. And one of the I was going to say is, you know, I was going to get you on the subject of reinterpreting mm-hmm. music, because that's one of the things that you really do a lot of. On this album, because as you said, you were not necessarily taking tried and true love songs, and you're really taking songs that are not necessarily songs you would categorize as a romantic song.
Yeah, it's not something people are going to put in the background and then, you know, make right. love.
Right, exactly. Because and one of the things that I thought was really interesting, the what you did, and I touched on really briefly, was you turned a specific show tune into a lullaby, which it was, I when I saw it on there and I had read some of the liner notes about it, and before I actually listened to the album, and that is you took Together Wherever We Go from Gypsy, which is definitely got a specific use in the show, which is sort of a rallying cry that Mama Rose uses in a very driven way, you know, not necessarily for the best reasons in the show, because she's so driven.
Right. Not gonna win
any more. Her ulterior motives are not necessarily the best in what she's doing, but you turned it into a lullaby. So explain one, the concept of why you did that and how you did it.
So the first thing is I wanted a lullaby.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first thing. I walked in and I said, okay, guys, I want to do a lullaby. I want to, you know, because I do think they're can, you know, not a sexual thing, but just there is something romantic about a relationship with children. I feel that way. And so, you know, at first we were talking about ones that exist and I was like, oh God, no, that's too, you'd have to be too clever. And I don't want to be clever. You know, clever is, it's easy to be clever.
Well, it's kind of, it becomes a little gimmicky, and then it becomes a little bit that it overshadows the song.
Yeah. And so then, you know, sometimes I don't remember who came up with the idea first, because we work so collaboratively, but I remember it was Barry and Chris and I in Chris's apartment, and the song came up. Chris went to the piano and, you know, it was like, oh my gosh, this could work. This could really work. And that one was really, can I just say, that was one of the harder ones, because, you know, you want to keep it as absolutely simple as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And just let the arrangement that Chris created kind of lead the romantic interpretation, if that makes any sense. So in some ways I feel like I am completely carried by that arrangement. Do you know what I mean? And I can just be so incredibly simple. But of course, when you sing simply, it's actually harder. So, you know, you're like, so, mm-hmm. you know, I say simple, but I mean simple as in the interpretation and the execution, but we were very proud of it.
Whatever we do, we're gonna go through it together. We may not go far, but sure as a star, wherever we are, it's together. Wherever I go, I know he goes. Wherever I go, I know she goes. No fits, no fights, and no egos. Amigos, together. All out or all in, and whether it's win, place or show, with you for me and me for you, we'll muddle through whatever we do together. Wherever we go. through thick and through thin, all out or all in, and whether it's wind, place or shore, with you for me and me for you, we'll muddle through whatever we do together
Honestly, it came out better than I thought. and I have to tell you, part of that is because of my creative team. So when we got into the studio and we started to record this, my percussionist, Rex Benincasa, he is a world-class percussionist. He is unbelievable. And he heard what we were doing. And he's like, so after we did the foundational session, the recording, and we were all fine with it, he's like, I want to do something. And so we're like, okay, so we set up all of his percussion and we were in the engineering room and we did a few run-throughs and he was just doing his magic. And I remember, I'm getting shivers now. I remember we're in the engineering room and we looked at each other and we're like, this is done. Because we were thinking of adding a clarinet to it or something. And we're like, no, this is done. I mean, really.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fun to see. So I have to say, and this happened quite a bit with this album, it was fun to see our musicians getting inspired and getting like, I want to add this, or let me do this. Or, you know, it makes you feel good because you feel like they're feeling invested and, mm-hmm. and they're into it too. And it's not just a job.
Right. And I'm glad you brought that up because that's kind of where I wanted to go next, because I wanted to talk about the work that Chris Denny did on the arrangements. And because that's a big part of this album, okay. is it really sets the tone and the mood for the entire album. And he's done such a, I want to talk about the conversations you must have, I want to kind of peek into the conversations you must have had with him at the beginning in terms of what you wanted the tone and the sound to be for the entire album. Because what he's created, it really works, and it's gives such incredible support to your vocals that mm-hmm. it really helps. And then go into talking about the musicians, because you're working with such incredible musicians on this. And I love the fact that on your website, you really give credit, including photographs and stuff, of each individual musician you talk about, so that you're giving like real spotlight on all the musicians who worked on this album, because you don't always see that. I mean, you'll see them enlisted in the credits of the liner notes, but you don't see, like you did, you've got like a photograph of each and every one until you say they played on this track and this is the instruments they played, and you really give a lot of credit to them.
I love my musicians. I'm not mm-hmm. kidding. I mean, you know, I do have a little bit of a loyalty strain in me, but not if it affects the quality.
Right.
And so when I say that I love these people, they're superior. They're mm-hmm. they're really, really exceptional in what they do. And they do come to the rehearsals and they are, they're, you know, for instance, I just called to say I love you. When we first went into rehearsal with Rex, my percussionist and drummer, and Marianne McSweeney, my bass player, and they were not happy with some of the choices Chris and I made. And it was really great because they wanted us to more purely get into the pocket of that Afro-Latin, mm-hmm. Thing. And some of the choices that Chris and I had made didn't quite fit that. And quite honestly, it was more, the reason we did that was our own personal ignorance,
mm-hmm.
honestly. So then we have these two incredible musicians who are going now, and we're talking tweaking. It wasn't like, but I mean, still tweaks matter. And so we're in that rehearsal and we must have worked in that song. Usually, you know, you run a song for 20, 30 minutes, you move on. We must have been on that song for well over an hour because, you know, just these little tweaks, they're like, no, this is what you want. This is what you want. And I'm like, you know, they didn't have to do that. They just had to read the music and we would have moved on. But they weren't going to let me. They were taking care of me too. They were watching out for me, you know? And when it comes to Chris and him, you know, Chris and I met during the pandemic and we met online. We started this online show called Virtual Shorts. And because there was this new technology coming out around the time of the pandemic, believe it or not, in which you could go on, it's called Jam Kazam, where you could go on and you could perform. You could, like, Chris was playing in his home in Manhattan. I was in my home in Queens. We would have someone out in California and we'd all be in Jam Kazam and we could sing with no latency issues. We could all perform. We could have musicians and everything. And we were kind of, I was trying to promote that during the pandemic for other musicians. You know, I thought this is a really great thing. So we started this show. And I started it with Chris because I had been told that he was into it. When I met him a year and a half later after the pandemic and found out that he was like 6'6", I was like, what the hell? Little head for me. And so when we started, this is really our first full project together. So we were actually getting to know each other. And we've done stuff. Don't get me wrong. We did virtual shorts and we've done things here and there. But this was our really first full from beginning to end project together. And we were learning about each other. Chris and I are incredibly different. He is calm and steady. And I'm not. And it was... And I like that. I don't want someone to be like me. That's not going to serve.
No, he balances you out.
He balances me out. But so really, this was even more rewarding for me to know that there's such a great future for me with Chris. You know what I mean? Because there could have not been. This is, like I said, this was our first one. And you know, I was like, okay, you know, let's see how this works. And, you know, but the wonderful thing about Chris is he listens to me. And if I have a really crazy bad idea, we laugh about it. You know, it's not, but I cannot tell you how rare it is to be listened to as an artist. And, you know, there were sometimes I had ideas that I was embarrassed to share and he'd like push me, say, no, tell me, you know what? And they ended up being really important. He'd be like, because I think when I gave him ideas, whether we used them or not, it informed him about who I was, you know?
Right.
And the more he got to know what I wanted to do, and there are certainly some things that I think Chris would, you know, be like, I can't believe we did that. But we all, including me, we all understood that, you know, this was me. This album is me. And how do we best serve that vision? And he was there for me. I mean, you know, I just, you know, and then, so then we've got, in addition to Marianne McSweeney is like my person. I really do love her. She was not able to do one of the recording sessions. And so we invited Jay Lenhart to do one of the recording sessions. And it happened to be the session in which we recorded I Feel the Earth Move. And in the course of, and it's a very different version from Carole King's. And in the course of rehearsing and we're in the studio, Jay says to me, you know, Anne, he said, I've performed this with Carole King.
Oh.
So I love that. I'm like, oh my gosh, sorry, Jay. And he was a love. He was an absolute love. But when Marianne was available, Marianne I've been working with for years. I don't know what else can I say about Marianne. I just love her. You know, we've just known each other for many years, and she's really quite brilliant. The other musician that I really need to mention is Sean Harkness. So he has a very interesting role in this particular album. So I love Sean. The first time I heard him play, I remembered I was in the audience and I sat there and I go, okay, we're working together someday. I just really was like, we have to work together someday. And eventually we did. He was on the last album too. And on that album, he and I did a song, just the two of us, called Ah, Sweet Mystery of Life. And it did really, really well streaming, still doing well. And so, yeah, I had to bring him back. But this is what's so cool about Sean. Sean, first of all, is a very funny guy. We laughed most of the time, but we couldn't stop putting him in things. We're like, putting him, let's let him do this. Let him. The song that we added him to, that he actually changed my interpretation, is the Stephen Lutvek song. I just wanted you to know. We did it without guitar. And I had sung that song for years. I've known it. And so I had my interpretation. And then my producer, Paul Rolnick, was like, you know, I think we should rock this one. Let's get this to rock a little bit more. And I said, okay, let's invite Sean in. Let's, you know, so Sean puts his electric guitar into it. Well, Sean went way farther than Paul or I expected. Mm-hmm. And our initial reaction was, no. This is too much. But after we both thought about it, I thought, you know what? I'm going to go back into the studio and re-record my vocal to mm-hmm. match what he's doing, because what he's doing is just so fresh and it's so unexpected. For anyone who knows the song, no one is expecting what we do with it. And I'm really glad we decided that. So he really changed that arrangement.
There's a store on the corner selling comic books and candyware. When I was 8, I lived a life of crime. I never did time, but I would steal little stuff. But it was enough to feel like I would really rather spend the dime. So I swore there and then I would not steal again. And I did not, well, not a lot, well, not at least till I was 10. And over there, that's the store where I do not go anymore. And I just wanted you to know. There's an alley under the highway. Oh, it's really dark and scary. Yeah, well, that's the place where I first learned to kiss. Why am I telling you this? I would go where the other kids who were in the know would go, and they would show what to do. And in turn, I would learn about the adolescent body as it stumbled toward and fumbled finding bliss. So X marks the spot where I hung out a lot. And I just wanted you to know. I just I just wanted you to know.
Speaking of really changing, one of the other things that you kind of reinterpreted for this album, which I wanted to bring up, which is nothing to do with the songs, was your look in terms of...
Gene Reed.
I know, because your I know this is really silly because it has nothing to do with the recording itself, but the entire packaging of this album is so out of the ballpark on this, because you look fantastic on the cover. All of your promo photos for this album are beyond amazing. It's like total glamour treatment, makeup, your wardrobe, hair, everything. Where I was like, holy cow, Anne.
I know. So this is what's so funny. So now I can tell you a story about the graphics for Reimagine. Again, Reimagine was a fluke. It wasn't supposed to happen.
Right.
I had no plans for, you know, a CD image. I had nothing. And I didn't have any money for it either. Mm-hmm. So I literally had to hand over like just pictures that I had. Mm-hmm. And Lisa Reese, who was the graphic designer for that one, had to create something.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I literally didn't have any good images. So she did what she did. And I thought what she did with Reimagine was really,
really no, it's fine. It's perfectly fine packaging for the other album.
But for a first album and all you see are my eyes, mm-hmm. you know, it's not exactly going to sell who I am. Nobody knows who those eyes belong to. So for this album, we did an actual photo shoot with Gene Reed, who's brilliant, and Lisa Reese did the graphics again. And, you know, Gene, it was a magical, you know, I've said to so many of my friends, everyone has to have a Gene Reed photo shoot before they die. I'm telling you, it was just really magical. And, you know, and I have so many other, I mean, that's just that, you know, I have, mm-hmm. I have literally have hundreds of photos from that photo shoot that I'll be able to use. And yeah, you know, it is a romantic album. So we went for the romantic.
Of course. No, I was so impressed. I got the promotional materials you sent me and I went, good for you. I was like, you totally, well, because it was like you took this project and you ran with it and you created this beautifully produced, beautifully arranged, beautifully sung album. And you went all the way. And the packaging is gorgeous. The photos are great. You look amazing. And it's like, that's exactly the way you should do it. Right? You do 100%. You do the whole thing.
Yeah. And again, you know, I didn't do the packaging. Lisa did. You know
right,
what I mean?
But I
surround myself with good people.
Exactly.
I'm not an idiot.
Well, of course.
You know, someone literally asked me just last week, you know, what's your advice for young people, you know, working? And I said, you know, quality over quantity. I said, surround yourself with good people. Don't mm-hmm. worry about doing a lot. Just do it well.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. Because you had, like you said, unexpected success with the first album. And you could have kind of rested on that and kind of repeated that and hoped for the best. But you didn't. I mean, this time you went in and, you know, you really put a lot of thought and effort into this album. And I think the end product is really, really good. I mean, it's just such a fantastic album.
Oh,
I sat and listened to it and went, I was just blown away. I really was. I just sat there and said, this is such a good album. So strong.
And, you know, one of the things that was the most anxiety ridden for me, because I'm, you know, the bulk of my career is live performing.
Mm-hmm.
All of the arrangements on Reimagine, I'd sung in front of an audience before many times. This album, not like
mm-hmm.
I did not have the feedback, you know, hey, audience, I'm telling you, you inform artists so much. You'd be surprised. It really affects how we interpret things and how we, you know, measure and all that different stuff. And I had none of that. You know, literally, I had to trust, you know, my instincts as far as how I thought an audience was going to respond. And that was a little bit uncomfortable. You know, mm-hmm. it's not my comfort zone, but I think it worked out. I mean, I think You know, both Chris and Barry said to me, "And you know, as you sing these songs live now, you are going to find new things and you're going to be really mad that you didn't record it that way." I said, "Really? Oh, well." But
that's ultimately, in some ways, that's how regular recording artists go anyway. They record the album first and then they go out and do concerts.
That's exactly right. I agree with you. And that's what I try to remind myself. It's like, you know, this is the norm for recording mm-hmm. artists. Mm-hmm. This is the norm. So, mm-hmm. you know, get used to it, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Well, speaking of which, you are going to be performing live, which is what we are also going to be promoting. Not only are we promoting the album, but on Tuesday, May 14th, you will be at Birdland in New York doing an album release party at 5:30 p.m. There will be a link here on the radio show page if people are going to be in New York and they want to come see you singing these songs live, maybe slightly a little bit different, maybe, depending. Hopefully not too different than the album.
Not too different.
But you will be seeing her singing them in front of an audience for the first time, I guess. That'll be an interesting experience. So we will be seeing the people. You can see her at Birdland. Like I said, on Tuesday, May 14th, purchase the tickets here at the link on the webpage. I assume that you are going to be then booking some more Romantic Notion concerts. Is that the plan, I hope?
Yeah, absolutely. I certainly hope so. I mean, yeah. I mean, this one will be a particularly special one because I'm going to have Aaron Hike, who played saxophone and flute on the album. He's going to be there. So he's mm-hmm. going to add his touches. We're going to have, you know, a pretty rip-roaring time. I guess that means we're going to have about five musicians on stage. That may not be what the future Romantic Notions shows are like, because that's right. A little But we're pretty excited about this show. So we'll see.
That's great. And so people can, and where's the best place for people to actually purchase the album?
Well, it releases on this coming Tuesday, May 7th.
Right.
And it's going to be everywhere. Wherever you, if you purchase on iTunes or, you know, Apple or Amazon or Deezer, mm-hmm. wherever it is available, and you can also stream. And, you know, one little thing, I really think that, at least when I was a kid, I loved reading liner notes.
Yes.
And because there is less, significantly less, number of people who have CD players or even albums anymore. Yeah, you know, they say there's a resurgence, but it's not that big of a resurgence. It's not coming back as much as I think they initially expected. You know, liner notes are kind of, you know, a dying thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's unfortunate. So one of the things that I am going to be doing is if people go on Spotify, I'm going to have a QR code on my Spotify page so that people can access the liner notes.
Oh, great. Great. That's perfect.
I don't know. You know, you're sitting there, you listen to the music, you kind of want to read about it. I don't know.
No, I think that's great. I think that's great. And I think, you know, right. Yeah. And some artists are starting to realize that as well, that, you know, having liner notes accessible somewhere, you know, even if it's just a PDF download that people can go to the website and download the liner notes somewhere, because you do want to read about the process of making the album. They want to read a little bit about why you chose some of the songs, what the songs mean to you. And as I tell people, you know, streaming is fine, but it doesn't put a whole lot of money in the pockets of the artists. So right. And it's not that expensive to purchase a download. So purchase the download if you like it. It's okay to stream it, to listen to it and sample, you know, get a chance to hear it, but it does put some money into Anne's pocket if you actually purchase a download. And it's not that. Yes, please support artists so that Anne can go back into the studio and do another album.
Yes, that would be so lovely.
That's the point. So final question for you. So what do you want a listener, a person sitting down and listening to this album, what do you want them to experience when they're sitting down and listening to this? I mean, where are you wanting to take them when they're sitting and listening to this album?
I really hope that it's all about heart to heart to me. Even the upbeats, even the fun stuff, you know, mm-hmm. It really is. And that's, the biggest compliment I can have is, you know, that someone listened to this and their heart is full when, you know, they just feel so nourished after they listen to it. That would be the thing that makes me feel the most gratified.
I agree. And I think one thing I will add is that it's a very full album and you feel really, and you don't feel sad. It's not like a sad romantic album. It's a very uplifting, fulfilling album. It just makes you feel really warm and full when you listen to it. So that's a big compliment because it's not one of those albums that's full of really sad love songs. It's an album that's full of very happy, warm love songs.
And, well, you know, and even Didn't We, which is about, mm-hmm. you know, my interpretation, and I hope people get some sense of this, is, you know, I kind of lean on almost because that means that maybe.
Right.
Next time.
Yes.
You know, try again.
Exactly. Well, Anne, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show again. And again, remind everybody to pick up your tickets to see Anne at Birdland on Tuesday, May 14th at 5:30 p.m. And also please get out there and purchase Romantic Notions because it is really, truly a fantastic vocal album. And Anne's a fantastic artist because this is really, really a fantastic album. So congratulations.
Thank you.
When the sun has set and the world's in silhouette, people get romantic notions. On a summer night, sharing drinks by candlelight, we invite romance. Often when I reach the end of the day, I dream of the way life could be. Gazing at the stars, I leave all my cares, my earthly affairs behind. Dreams don't all come true, not for me and not for you. Still, I can't deny, dreams help get me by. Leave me my romantic notions. When the fog rolls like an autumn breeze, twisting through the willow trees, such are these romantic notions. Often when I feel the vines growing tight, I go on a flight of fancy, picturing a dream as if it were true. Helps people get through the night and come out all right. We can light a spark when the world is growing dark. Let your vision soar. That's what dreams are.
Thank you.